So, as was mentioned, the topic for today's panel discussion is evolution and human perfectibility. We found a very interesting reading from H.P. Blavatsky's Theosophical Articles, Volume 1. It's from her article entitled "The Fall of Ideals." I'm sorry, I not this idea.
Oh, sorry.
We'll get it together. So it's on page 142. Hitherto, it has remarked in almost every historical age that a wide interval, almost a chasm, lay between practical and ideal perfection. Yet, as from time to time, certain great characters appeared on earth who taught mankind to look beyond the veil of illusion. Man learnt that the gulf was not an impassable one, that it is the province of mankind, through its higher and more spiritual races, to fill the great gap more and more with every coming cycle. For every man as a unit has in his power to add his mite towards filling it. Yes, there are still men who, notwithstanding the present chaotic condition of the moral world and the sorry debris of the best human ideals, still persist in believing and teaching that the now ideal human perfection is no dream, but a law of divine nature, and that had mankind to wait even millions of years, still it must someday reach it and re-become a race of gods. So the panel today will definitely address all the ideas that were mentioned in this paragraph as to how we can become and the process we go through to become a race of gods.
Friends, the word evolution entered the English language 400 years ago, approximately, via the Latin, and it means an opening of what was rolled up. An opening of what was rolled up. So it's very interesting that Theosophy posits not a creation anew, but an unfolding or emanations. Man, the thinker, stands atop an immense and silent evolution. Man is the temple of Solomon, or wisdom, constructed in silence without hammer or saw. Man has an intimate connection with every secret part of nature from which the temple has been built up. The question arises, what is the universe for? What final purpose is man, the immortal thinker, here for? It is all for the experience and emancipation of soul. This is, we are taught, that the object of evolution is conscious godhood. As man raises himself, so do we raise all of the kingdoms resident in our constitution. The mineral, the vegetable, the animal. All are evolutions of soul and consciousness. The word evolution is the best word from a theosophical standpoint to use for treating the genesis of men and things, of all embodied existence. Krishna in the Gita says, at the beginning of the day of Brahma, all things come forth from the non-developed principle. And at the coming of Brahma's night, they are resolved into it again. Or we could say that the universe is unrolled in manifestation and rolled up at the end of a cycle. The coming forth and returning of day and night knows no end, for evolution is a never-ending process. The absolute, the deific principle, ever is, and we, along with everything in manifestation, are emanations of this evolutionary process. Theosophy holds that all things are already in esse, being brought forth from time to time in conformity with the inherent law of the absolute. What can be said of the absolute? It is. It is duration and it is law, but it does not evolve. It is eternal duration, never manifesting without any finite and without any finite attributes. As we are finite and limited, we could never comprehend what is finite. Let us next consider spirit and matter. Spirit and matter are co-eternal and eternally bound during manifestation. Real matter is called prakriti in Sanskrit. It is the root of the manifested matter that we perceive with our senses. This is the matter which the soul needs to, which this is the matter which the soul needs in order to acquire experience. The Gita refers to spirit, Purusha, and matter, Prakriti, as being co-eternal and not divisible from each other. Our next consideration is that Theosophy teaches is that there are three lines of evolution, to wit, the intellectual, the physical, and the spiritual. Intellectual evolution is the cause of physical evolution, and spiritual evolution is the cause of them both. When we consider these three phases of evolution, we come back to the proposition that this is a universe of life, ever evolving under the rule of law, within the whole, not outside. A perfect illustration is the development of the human embryo. The human embryo shows each stage of the evolution of forms used prior to the incarnation of the mind being, which is man, when manas was lit up in the middle of the third round. This occurred 18 million years ago. Another consideration, evolution proceeds through constant change. There is no stoppage whatsoever. So we will hear the second panelist at this time.
So this part of the panel will be looking at the idea of human perfectibility, and basically human perfectibility as it is as it works together with evolution, because human perfectibility cannot be accomplished were it not for evolution. So we just heard an overview of evolution. Evolution is one of those basic theosophical propositions which we have been studying this past month. And it's also a major idea in the philosophy. Evolution is the vehicle for human perfectibility. And it is also the purpose of evolution. Now, we want to take a peek at the idea of genius, because genius is an interesting idea, because many people think that even if a person has an incredible talent, say for math or music or whatever, they say, wow, he's a genius. But a genius, when we're looking at perfectibility, is not necessarily perfectibility. Someone who is a genius and only has a talent in one area cannot really be looked at as being a perfected being. But if we look at this idea of genius and just think of someone that has an incredible array of talents in all areas, then we can look at this idea of true genius, but still not necessarily perfected. So genius then is just a stepping stone, we can say, towards this idea of perfectibility. So why is human perfectibility such an important idea in the philosophy? We just heard this idea of the goal of evolution, and we can add to that as it is the purpose of the soul to go back to the source, and the source being that all-pervasive idea of, what's the word we're looking for? Of, that deific essence. We want to get back. It is trying to perfect itself so that it can get back to the source. The road to spiritual development is through evolution, and the process is said to be the major idea is that of a complete subjugation of the lower nature by the higher. And this is what occurs during evolution, life after life after life. It is the soul attempting to raise up that lower nature to be in constant contact with the higher. And this is what is occurring during the evolution of mind. Let's see. There's another article by HPB called Spiritual Progress. And she says, the true adept, the developed man, must, we are always told, becomes. He cannot be made. The process is therefore one of growth through evolution, and this must necessarily involve a certain amount of pain. So this pain that's being spoken of is physical, mental, and intellectual. The issue being that at this stage of our evolution, we are looking for and about, and we want to get more of the materiality of life. We want personal happiness, and just constantly looking for the impermanent not the permanent, but the impermanent in all of life. And there's always that idea of the sin of separateness. So it's all this pain that is blocking our nature from progressing through evolution towards perfectibility. And since our evolutionary task is to gain perfectibility, we have to look at these issues and again, subjugate the lower by the higher. We want results from what we do. We want thanks. We want esteem. And this is exactly what the Bhagavad Gita speaks of, that we cannot do our duty and with that in mind of gaining, you know, acclimates for what it is that we're doing. We have to do it because it needs to be done. And as the aspirant progresses towards perfectibility, he enters into another level of evolution where these soul powers increase and evolve as well. These cannot be forced. One cannot go to somebody who advertises these psychic powers and expect to gain perfectibility. This is not how it's done. It's done by accomplishing and overcoming the pain that was just explained. And it, as we said, it is this pain that needs to be overcome because it is the pain that is blocking these powers from being expressed, from our higher nature from being expressed. And it must not be thought that the acquirement of these powers is the road to spiritual perfection, because if anybody has these powers, it's not necessarily that they are a perfected human being, because it has to be wanted so that we can help others. So the object of all evolution is not individual salvation, but that the whole should be lifted up, that everything should be raised to a higher degree. An elder brother is one who has been perfected by doing service and now retains his powers devoted to the service of mankind and all the kingdoms. And it is said that this germ of these powers is in every being. So we have these powers in us. It's just a matter of getting rid of the pain, of clearing out all the ideas that we have regarding materiality so that the higher can work through and subjugate the lower. It is the elder brothers who were men and perfected in former periods of evolution, and they are the production of perfect man. So we'll take your questions and comments. SL?
There are two words. Sometimes they're used interchangeably, but they apparently have different meanings. Could we have an explanation of the difference between perfectibility and perfection?
The difference between perfectibility and perfection. Well, we think when we're talking about perfectibility, there's the possibility of becoming perfected. So we don't know that there would be, one is becoming and the other is that it has become.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay.
Follow-up. Is there an ending to perfection?
No.
And why not?
Because it's an ideal, but if there was an ending, there would be a stoppage of evolution. And there is no stoppage. So there's relative perfectibility. There's perfectibility is the ability to become as perfect as one can during any round or race or period of evolution, which are periodic and finite. But absolute perfection would contradict evolution, would it not? Because it's an ongoing, ceaseless process.
JCS?
So when we're considering this subject matter, it's not a linear process, is it? It's a spiral that is eternal and ongoing. And it's only relative to the point of manifestation where we are now. So even those that are walking among us that are very close to perfectibility, that are highly evolved, are still only highly evolved in comparison or in relationship to the conditions of this manifestation. So if this is eternal, the entire process is going to continue to spiral, and that confidence in perfectibility is that it is hopeful, it is eternal, and it has no finite form, because that would be transitory and finite and something that comes to an end.
And the philosophy speaks regarding that last comment that there is no end to evolution, that the soul is always, at some point will manifest, and there's never an end to what the soul can accomplish. And that when we look at this idea of perfectibility, there's always more room for growth. And we have a chat. Nothing is finite. Nothing is finite or linear. Evolution is circular. Yes.
Yeah, or a spiral is more of a spiral than an actual circle, because a circle would come back on itself, we think. Although there's that great symbol of the snake swallowing its tail, which is, that's a circle, but the snake also sheds its skin, and it's a continuous. We think that the snake swallowing its tail probably has to do more with the continuum of life. SL?
On the Gita, it says light and dark are the world's eternal ways. So we're wondering if this process of evolution is a spiral. During this process of ongoing perfectibility, there must be times when it seems that humanity and ourselves are in a darker place than we were before. The fact that we're in a darker place, does that mean we're not able to... is that part of the process of perfectibility or perfection?
Well, we wonder if, just like certain planets, Mercury in particular, people pay attention to going retrograde, and people saying that all kinds of terrible things happen then. really know if that's accurate or not. We're definitely not an astrologer, but we do have to go back and learn lessons that we didn't learn, that we maybe thought we learned, but we didn't completely master. So we can have an intellectual understanding of something and think that we've got it, but really we haven't done all the work spiritually for our soul growth. So in a sense, we do go retrograde and have to go back and learn the lessons. And the most difficult lesson of all is pride, pride and self-regard. And we're told not to make them handmaidens to, or bondmaidens to our development, because they will blind us. They will, really is what they will do.
And we need to understand in regards to cycles that currently we are in the Kali Yuga, which is the dark age. And we are being, it's an opportunity actually, because if we can progress during the Kali Yuga, it is said that we're actually speeding up our development by being able to do that. But it's obvious if one looks out that we are definitely in a dark age. And as was just said, we have to be able to overcome that dark age, that darkness that is prevalent. And we can always make more progress by trying to do that. MDW.
I'm sure we've all seen this image. It's about evolution, but it's a ape that is progressing up until it's Homo erectus or whatever to a human being. So that concept we have grown up with. That was what we were taught. And how do we reconcile that, or how do we explain that, that idea?
Well, it's interesting because Darwin only used the word evolution once in the closing paragraph of his Origin of the Species. And he used another term, like discriminative development. We're not sure if it had to do with discrimination. In other words, the natural selection. And then his ideas were much changed by Herbert Spencer. And we've been saddled with this ever since. Since the 1859, we think, is when it came out. But the point is that we did not evolve from apes. We did not come up from the lower kingdom. There were several forms that were trial and error, as it were, before the human form was perfected. And then Manus was lit up by the solar Petries. The lunar Petries gave us our physical forms, and the lunar Petries lit up Manus, which is the thinker, man, the mind principle. And we are thinkers. And those other forms, actually, it goes into great detail in the Secret Doctrine, but you know, there's the Pithecoid apes are called the delayed race because they do have some of the Manus in them due to bestiality of the early races before the barrier was, the natural barrier was established. So that it's a whole long study, really. And we did not evolve up from the apes. is the what the theosophical teachings say. Absolutely not. We are mind beings. We're not we have animal forms, just like we have all the other kingdoms resident within us, the mineral, the vegetable, and the animal.
JCS?
So then a student could study the philosophy and follow the trail of the teaching that man, the spiritual essence, is eternal and always was, predates any manifestation on these lower planes. And in essence, the misuse or the use of the physical form of humans is actually the progenitor of the apes, not the other way around. And that's an individual study that can be done in all the different writings.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. SL?
We've been studying in our ocean classes recently the connection between our various human principles and the evolution of the earth and the races of humanity on it. And we learn at this particular time that the desire principle has the upper hand, but that mind is beginning to develop more and more. So our question is, if our perfection is relative, what would you say is the immediate goal for the average human being in this life? What is the goal of perfectibility that they should reasonably try to accomplish in their nature? Because not all can be adepts. But what can a average human being try to aspire to accomplish to reach a reasonable degree of perfectibility in the 70 to 100 years that they have in this incarnation?
No, we definitely think is doing your duty as it comes to you, what the Bhagavad Gita says, and doing your duty and not expecting any type of reward from doing it, because it has to be done. And also to help others, to do for others and not expect them, as was said in regards to duty, not expect them to pay back from your doing good for them, but helping others, and not even just the human kingdom, but the lower kingdoms as well. We need to be stewards of them. So we think helping all of life and doing your duty without expectation, because that way we're clearing out the lower so that it can be subjugated by the higher, in order to allow the powers to come through. But it is not something that we can really expect to accomplish in just one life.
But there is a point, there was a point in Buddha's life, in Krishna and Jesus, when they did become a flower, as it were, they did blossom. So we would say, right now, we should be kind, be compassionate, be considerate, and listen attentively to those around us and observe. Because if we are to become altruist in action, we need to become compassionate observers of the scene. And all of humanity, the vast majority of humanity, is really crying out for help in this present world. MGW?
In terms of that question, my mind went back, well, what would be a triumph of a lifetime? Well, perhaps to rid ourselves of one of our lower aspects of our nature, you know, gain some control over our being and our choices, and become conscious choosers rather than just reactors to circumstances.
Yes, become conscious choosers instead of reactors. That is a lesson that could take, we think, numerous lifetimes in order to accomplish. But no, it's helping others. And the interesting thing is, in regards to karma, that if there's an issue that is not resolved in this life, it will come back in a future life. So being aware of that, if we're having issues with another, to try and rectify those issues. Otherwise, they will come back and we'll have to deal with them later.
Yes, MDW.
But isn't that the reality, that the only thing that exists is this moment? That's all that exists, is this moment. And, you know, there's the past and there's the future, but there's only this moment where we are creating karma, or we are being, I guess. And here I am being with people or other souls with similar ideas, and that has been our bond. So, I mean, I think that's what you carry from lifetime to lifetime, so you're always searching for those associates or those that are of like mind.
Right. Well, the masters cannot do this. They've already accomplished their perfectibility to the level that was available in their period of evolution, and now they are our elder brothers, but they need companions, and we need, if we want to help, we have, the whole philosophy gives us hints how to be better able to help and teach others. So they need help. They can't do us for us, because it's just like a parent doing a science project for a child is not doing the child any favor at all. They're not learning. And we have to learn these lessons through trial and error, through pain and suffering and joy. And there's joy as well. But it's usually pain gets our attention.
There's several chats.
Okay.
We just want to say, and it is said in the philosophy that those of us that are together with others of like mind, that we have been exposed to these ideas in past lives, and we're bringing that desire forward to now, and hopefully we'll bring it into the future. So let's look at these chats. So the first one that came in is, how many incarnations does it take to attain perfectibility? Well, that's a question that cannot be answered at all, because nobody knows how many incarnations that's going to take to become perfected. So, MDW, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I certainly do. I've read that it takes 7 incarnations, but then again, I heard that it could take 70, or it could take 700. So I think your statement that it is correct, but I think somewhere in the teachings it does talk about this subject, but it's all rest upon our intent, And how strong that intent must be taken from life to life, and let it, it has to grow stronger.
Thank you. And the second one is, in a current manifestation, there are many factors that influence an individual's perfectibility. Those who have, quote, more, have a burden of responsibility, perfectibility that may be greater than someone whom has less. Oh, that's a question. Okay. We think mainly what it is like those who have the burden of responsibility and perfectibility, do they have a greater than someone who has less, a responsibility to them if they have less? We think there's a responsibility there.
What more or less of what? I mean, some people have great material wealth and it can be used for good. Some people have great spiritual knowledge, and certainly, so it's, we have a comment here in Theosophy Hall.
Well, can any one human being have more responsibility to assist someone in their evolution than vice versa? We all either have equal or we all have none, that we've seen. You know, we're all responsible first to ourselves to be the better able to help and teach others. But just because one may be perceived as being more developed, that doesn't give somebody else the excuse to not try harder.
So individual effort is always key. And really, when you get right down to it, it's for all responsible for one another, which we're here to try to help one another. And some people realize that and some people don't, but it's there. SL?
So as we look at the additional chat that came in on that question, we think the question could also boil down, does favorable or unfavorable karma in our life, this life we have, favorable or unfavorable karma, in any way affect the degree of responsibility that we have to others? In other words, if karma, under karma, we have more wealth, more time, more health, does that increase our responsibility opposed to those who don't have those things?
Yeah, we think so. Because if someone has warranted through karma to have more, to have better health, to have more financial or material goods, it behooves them, especially with the financial wealth, that they just don't hoard it to themselves and buy all these expensive things, that it should be given, not given, but it should be used to help others who need it, we would think.
Well, the philosophy doesn't focus on materialistic things too much. So it's, I mean, it's, that's an individual choice, and they'll, it's a case by case basis. Theosophy Hall.
Yeah, let's remember the third fundamental tells us that, you know, there is no privilege. The conditions into which we are born, we establish because of how we lived our previous lives. And so, you know, a person may be born into wealth, which is the perfect opportunity for him to abuse that wealth and teach himself the big lesson that he needs to. It's nobody else's business to tell somebody else how to use that.
Right.
It's each person's responsibility to look around and see how he can live his life in service to others. And meanwhile, that's the case. All souls have the same opportunity, same powers. It's just the conditions into which we're born, which we are all completely responsible for.
Great wealth can be the worst karma that there is, absolute worst, because it opens up all sorts of possibilities. And a person who is materialistic or passive or a lustful, gluttonous person, the seven deadly sins, they're all exacerbated by one who just goes willy-nilly and on a spending spree. And, you know, we can see that with gambling. We can see that with loose credit. There's just so many things.
And then we also hear about people that don't have good financial abilities, and they are helping others. We've heard of some poor families that take in a lot of foster kids, and they, you know, they don't have a lot, but they're willing to share whatever it is that they have, and helping with the neighbors. You know, there's so many stories about that. And so it depends on people's motives. It depends on their, you know, their karmic past that they're bringing forward.
So we'd like to read a short quote here from Robert Crosby, which we think is relevant to this discussion. Man must save himself. No one, however high in intelligence and spiritual power, can do it for him. He must learn and exercise his spiritual perceptions and powers to make the material expression of them conform to that spiritual nature. In fact, he will have to learn, even if through untold lives he brings upon himself inexpressible suffering, for when he has suffered enough, he will see the error of his ways, and then perhaps through many lives make restitution for wrongs done or duties left undone. JCS?
It's interesting that the discussion has almost gone full circle. For those of us that are most concerned about the array of materialism and the array of values in the human society, a lot of what we were offered in school is a predisposition to Herbert Spencer's twists of Darwin's scientific research. It's the Spencerian model that talks about the survival of the fittest in human society that seems to support this competition, unbridled competition among and between humans, so that only the strong will survive. And in those Spencerian models, we have the roots of too often common thinking that if you're poor, you must be in some way lazy or sinful or deserving of punishment. You know, so it's a great study of evolution gone wrong and misapplied to look again at that Spencerian model and what we may have learned in sociology and political science and history, and then look at the theosophical premises, which are purely spiritual, and applied spirituality, saying that this incarnation is unique, but it's the tip of the iceberg of what the soul has experienced and what it will experience. And there's a chat.
Grassroots giving is often selfless, though gratifying, as the giver often sees his or her deed appreciated or acknowledged, though not in a public way.
MDW.
I think that goes with the old expression that if a beggar comes to your door knocking for food or sustenance, don't send your servant. You go yourself and you give to them. And through that transaction is where that exchange of hope and connection takes place. Yes, I agree very much with the chat.
Yes. SL?
Wonderful chat, but there's a hook in it, and that is not to let our selfless service there depend on whether we're acknowledged for it or not, even at the grassroots level. The real, we might say, gratification comes from the knowing that we did the best that was right to us and shouldn't have to depend on what praise we get from others. And we think one of the speakers referred to that. That's a degree of perfection that we can try to develop in this life, learning to act unselfishly without the expectation of personal reward. If we can achieve that in even a small way, we've accomplished a tremendous amount.
Yes, we have a minute or two, if anybody wants.
1 minute.
1 minute.
Well, so this is the end of the basic theosophical teachings for the month. And December, our December program of Sundays, you don't have it there?
No.
Okay. What did we do? It's over there. Report. All right, we don't know what happened.
The December theme is cycles and cyclic law.
Cyclic law.
Yeah.
Okay, so we still have about a minute left if anyone.
So the class for next Sunday is the harmony and rhythm of nature.
Okay, and the hour, the cycle has come. The hour has. So have a good day, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.